hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. That's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with over 10,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, and she's in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of packing tape, new front door keys, and a race to remember where we packed the coffee machine. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you? Did you get home safely from Venice?
Yes, we did get safely home from Venice, but in that way that always happens sometimes when you get home from a holiday, you sometimes feel like you need another one.
But you're going to tell me a little bit about that later, aren't you, Nikki? Because I looked in the running sheet and I saw that your holiday experience is under expat relationships. So we'll follow our usual format and we'll break the podcast up into five topics, which are geographically challenged, which is where we as expats can face sort of situations and thoughts and memories from having lived and loved in more than one place for any period of time. We'll also cover expat relationships, which can be relationships within your family, your partner, your friends, your colleagues, or anyone in your expat travels.
We'll also look at expat tech, which is where we look at the latest tech available to expats and try and give tips. And then also expat money, where we discuss money issues that are particularly relevant to expats.
And location, 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 where we speak to an expat who's living somewhere in the world and we ask them the fat five questions. Okay, Nikki, geographically challenged, I'm going to kick off with this one this week because I was feeling very geographically challenged last week, and this one's going to be a little bit tricky because I'm talking about schooling. And Nikki, whenever we talk about schooling, it gets tough because you don't want to publicly kind of out your own children's situation or your own school. But for me, I guess what I wanted to sort of talk about is a feeling when you don't speak the same language culturally as the school your children may be attending. And this is tough, right? Because for Americans, they go to American schools, Brits go to British schools, Australians sometimes go to Australian schools. We have a German school here, and I think we even have a Swedish school here. We have a Finnish school here. But sometimes you don't put your child in the local school, nor do you put them in the school of your origin. And I want to sort of talk about that. I mean, Nikki, what different school systems have you done over your travels?
So in Hong Kong, we were in a British school system, and then we moved to South Africa and in a local school system there. It was a local private school. And then in the States, we were in the public school system, but it was an American school. I mean, and now we've come here and we're in an international school, and I have found them all to be vastly culturally different and have had all sorts of difficult conversations and reflections afterwards in all those locations for various reasons. I mean, yes. Once in South Africa, I was in tears in the principal's office just because I didn't really understand what was happening. And it was really such a simple little thing, but they and I were just looking at it from a totally different point of view, and we couldn't come to the middle. It's like talking to my husband sometimes. I say we're trying to get to the same outcome. We're talking about the same thing, but we're just looking at it totally differently. You know, we've got to get yeah. past this middle bit.
See, we did, in my world, we started off with a British school, and then we went to a Canadian school, local school, and then we went to an American school. And then here in Qatar, we've gone to an American school. And that's the other thing of what can work at an elementary or primary school level can suddenly become very different at a high school level. And it's really got me thinking in the last couple of weeks about why that is. And is that because when your children are really little, the basics are all the same? It's about, you know, a good education and learning to read and write and, you know, the basics of math and whatever. But it's also, there's a lot of stuff about learning how to be a good person and how to treat others right. You know, like primary schools are generally a really lovely place, no matter where you are. Kids sing and dance and, you know, do cute colouring in, and you go to cute events. You go to a lot more cute events, you know, when kids are little, in little schools, they do lots of cute things. You just have to look at the difference in classrooms. You know, everything's decorated and colourful, and you celebrate all the different celebrations. But in high school, things get a little bit more serious and they get a little bit more scholastic, and people start looking for certain outcomes and talking about universities, and things are different. And you know, just recently we've had a situation where, you know, I had a child who did something very naughty in that he disrupted a classroom. And I want to be really clear, there were no drugs and alcohol. There were no, there was no swearing. There was no yelling. There was no outrageous behavior. Yeah, it was a bit of IT that he thought was very funny. You know, I had this moment, and it's not about the suspension, because, you know, you've got to follow school rules, and he disrupted a classroom, and so that's what happens. But it was my child's language that he used. So when he was called in, they asked him, well, he actually walked in and said, look, I know why I'm here, and told them, you know, I know why I'm here, I know what I did, and I imagine that's what you want to talk to me about. Now, this child of mine also had told me before any of it happened, he'd come home from school and said, guess what I did at school today? So, you know, it must have been playing in the back of his mind that this could possibly result in something bigger. But what it was that really struck me was when the teacher said, why did you do it? He said, I made a bad choice because I make bad choices. And I just, you've been taught exactly what to say, exactly how to do that. But I was also thinking, it was just his language is so different culturally than what I can imagine.
Yeah, and I don't think so. I find that a very American thing to say, I made a bad decision or I made a bad choice. I chose the wrong thing. I don't think my children at the current school they're in would say that, but I think they would have said that if we'd still been in America. And it's different for you. So when I was in America and my children were in an American school, it was the whole culture. It was the pervading culture of the country. So it's easier in a way to accept, or not accept, but to engage and to sort of take it on, because that's where you are. That's all around you all the time. But where you are now, your children are in an American school, but you have very big diversity of culture around you. And so it's not the culture that you're feeling all the time. It's not the words you're hearing. It's not the language that's being used around you all the time. So that's even a little bit more challenging,
yes,
in a way,
yeah,
for you. I mean, your kids are, because they're at school, yeah. But
and
not.
This is not, I want to be really clear, this is not an American bashing moment.
Oh, no.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, your children are going to pick up culturally different things, and things are going to come out of their mouth all the time. And for me, for the first time, it wasn't, oh, how cute, you say cookies, not biscuits, or you say, you know, diapers, not nappies, or you say, you know, whatever. It was more this, oh my God, you have culturally learned that that is a response that you can use, because you've been in a system where that is the language you use to apologize or accept blame or whatever. And really what he had been taught to say as to what would be said at home. I mean, because when I said to him, what is the truth? He said, I thought it would be funny. Do you know, like?
Yeah. And that's what he said to you at home, right? So that's what he should have said to a teacher. But he knew if he said that to the teacher would give him a different response. Anyway, he got a bad response anyway. He could have said, I thought it would be funny the same. And the outcome would have been the same. I would have thought by saying I made a bad choice, the teacher would say, okay, we can talk about that.
Well, this is the thing. I really think in the modern age that we live in, if he would have said, because my children go to a school where there are plentiful amounts of counsellors and people to talk to and hold hands with and sing Kumbaya. So I know if he would have said, I'm just feeling really down at the moment and I've got an issue with this, or, you know, I'm feeling a bit depressed or whatever, he probably would have had more assistance. But I think, look, I think the point is, because I don't want to get into sort of his thing and what he did or whatever. I think, I guess what my sort of epiphany was at the time was, you know, sometimes culturally, we talk so much about the language and getting into who our children are surrounded by and what they're doing. And we love the fact that, you know, they're international and they're learning about all these, you know, different cultures and things. But I guess I was able to actually put my finger on why it's been so important for me for my bigger kids to go back to Australia for their last couple of years of learning. And it's not just about having them repatriated before they go to university, and it's not just about, you know, wanting them to be able to catch buses and trains and live that life at home. It's also that moment of when you hear your child answer in a response where you go, that is not us, that is not how we respond to things. And I, you know, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, yes, but Kirsty, maybe it's not you, but maybe it is him, because he did grow up in North America and he did spend some time there, and maybe that is him, and maybe you're making it more confusing. But I don't think so. I don't know, Nikki. This is truly the ultimate of being geographically challenged, of, you know, that whole confusion of what your culture is and who you are and how you respond to things.
And I think for him, he is a true third culture kid or a cross-culture kid, in that he has been raised and is being raised in many cultures, and he can transition quite easily. So he said one thing at school, which was, I made a bad choice. And then he said to you, I thought it was funny. So I think that he's shown that he's got excellent skills that he's gained through his education and through his living circumstances. So good job, school. Good job, parents.
So do you think you're going to drop a kid at school and that school's just going to be like school everywhere? And then you don't realise until you're at that school, you start to have all these flashbacks of your school life. Then it clicks to you, the things that you feel are either missing or that you're gaining. So, you know, I really notice it now that I have two children at school in Australia and two children at school here, in how different culturally things can be. In Australia, at parent-teacher drinks, you know, if someone's, there's alcohol, and that would never happen here. And not just because it's Qatar, but also I think when we were in, I remember when we were in Canada, it was seen as unacceptable to have alcohol.
Well, all the teacher gifts I gave in South Africa was alcohol.
Yeah.
And then when I went to America, you can't take it into the school. So I would have to say, oh, I've got a gift, it's in the car park. You know, I'll transfer it to you on the way. So, yeah, I mean, drinks at school, every other place I've lived except there. Not teachers during school hours.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, Nikki, my point is, of culturally, it's made me realise that while perhaps it didn't matter as much to speak a different cultural language when my kids were really little, and perhaps the things that I thought were cute and kind of funny little idioms. You know, like I always think, Nikki, I remember my mum saying, we came home from Libya, our kids were at a British school, and my eldest daughter asked Granny for some sweeties instead of lollies. She said, Granny, can we go to the shop and get some sweeties? And I remember everyone thought it was so incredibly cute that she'd used this different phrase. And then a couple of years later, there we were in Canada, and she came home and she asked for candy and said, Granny, can we go and get some candy? And they thought that that was very, very cute and funny that, you know, within the space of 2 years, she'd gone from being this British little miss to, this little Canadian. And I wonder, is it as cute when your 14-year-old says, I make bad choices? I make a bad choice. It's suddenly not cute because you're going, oh, hang on. This isn't just about your cute little accent or whatever. This is affecting the way you culturally, I guess, express yourself in different situations of your feelings. Yeah, for the first time ever, Nikki, and this is so crazy for me to say this because, I've said before, my eldest child, she now has an Australian accent after being home for a couple of years. My second child, it still sounds sort of, she's got a hint of American, she's got kind of an expat accent, I guess. My third child sounds incredibly American because he was really little when we were in Canada, and then we went to the States, and then we came here and he was in an American school. And for the first time ever, it occurred to me that someone in Australia will probably ask him where in America he's from, and he won't have an answer.
No, and that's when, you read all the books about third culture kids, and it's all about where you're from and when people ask you where you're from. And when you're with a family, when, you and G are there and the other kids, and people can see where it's all come from.
Yes.
But when he's out on his own in the world, and he has to be answering those questions, that's a whole different thing, and that's a whole different sort of conversation. That's a different level of sort of understanding of himself that he has to have.
Yeah. And also that, where are you from and where in America are you from are going to be two different ouches. Where are you from? You can get your standard answer. But then the whole, you've got an American accent, because I can't see that he's going to lose his as quickly as the others, because his is hard. It's a hard R. So, I guess I've really thought about that. Maybe that's it, Nikki, is that I've realised that he probably is a little bit more deeper, his roots are deeper in a different culture than the others.
Yeah, I remember when the first morning at the bus stop in America, someone said to my daughter who was starting kindergarten, and she was another student, said to her, "Where are you from?" And she said, "Well, I'm Australian, but I was born in Hong Kong, and this accent I'm talking to you with right now, it's from South Africa." So as a five-year-old, she was quite confident about everything to do with her life. But I think as you get older and people ask you that, it becomes more of an identity issue. But
I guess I really need to sit down with my guy as well before he goes back to make sure we've run through all of those things again of, what he's going to say and what he's going to do, so that he feels comfortable, because it will be an onslaught in those first few weeks of being new, and all those questions are going to come thick and fast, aren't they?
Absolutely. And as long as he feels comfortable about what he's going to say and you've talked to him and you feel confident, then job done.
Yes. All right. Now, I would like to hear anyone else, if they've had these similar feelings, could they please come and leave a message? And if you do want to leave us a message, just head over to the twofatexpats.com website and you can press the microphone button. It's as easy as leaving a voicemail. Now, Nikki, expat relationships, we hinted at this before when we were talking about your trip to Venice. Tell me, what's happened that's made you question your expat relationships after your trip to Venice?
Well, if you looked at my photos, everything is amazing.
Yes, your photos were incredible.
And that's what Venice is like in the sunshine. Every time you turn a corner, it's just there's another beautiful vista to take a photo of. So, and I just wondered whether people think holidays are better in retrospect. Remember that time we went to Venice? Let's look at the photos. Oh, look at these awesome photos. It doesn't show you where your child had a tantrum and it took, 3 hours to walk a 20-minute stretch of laneways, and it doesn't show you where you went to a restaurant where the night before you specifically went back because the night before you saw something that your kids wanted to get and then they said, you're not getting it, you know, we're not serving it to you. And then your kids said, it's because we're tourists. Tourists and immigrants are always treated badly. You know, and all these things. And we came away and my husband finished the holiday by saying, yes, we're never traveling with the children. And I said, look, this holiday's been perfectly fine. I really enjoyed it. We had great weather. We had a great location to stay in. We did fun things. We had maybe sort of 6 or 7 hours of a little of quite unpleasant stuff. But do we have to all remember that? You know, what is the best thing about the holiday? I asked them as we were leaving. Wheels up was somebody's answer. And make your own magnum was somebody else's answer, which, you know, in the scheme of things, given everything we saw and did, I didn't feel the best about that. But it was one of those things where when you go on holidays, it's not always a holiday. You know, you can't always just relax.
That kind of reminds me of the story of the kids that I grew up with who were from out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. Like their parents saved all their money and took them away on this amazing trip to America, and they did absolutely everything. And when they got them home, you know, they'd gone to New York and they'd gone to LA and they'd, but one of the things was they'd gone to the Grand Canyon and they'd gone fishing somewhere. And when they asked them what the highlight was, they said it was when we went fishing, which is something that they do every day in their little hometown out in nowhere. And their parents just sat there going, oh, my God, we just went through, because they felt that their children were missing out because they lived, you know, really so remotely. But that was the bit that their kids enjoyed the most.
Which is fine. But I said to my kids, you know, when you're at university and when you're in your 20s, you'll say, oh, yeah, I've been to Venice, I've been to Paris, I've been to Prague. You'll be wanting to impress people by that. And don't you dare use that, because you've hated every second of it.
So you were saying, don't you dare brag about these trips later in life, right, because you were awful the whole time you had them. See, I am in a completely different situation from you at the moment, Nikki. I did look at your Venice pictures with pure envy. And I have to say, the little bit of your Instagram stories where you showed the family, you all looked so happy and smiling and really joyful. I was thinking, this is a really good holiday for them, because you had snagged the ultimate accommodation. Like, that accommodation was amazing. And for those who haven't seen your Instagram or the pictures in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group, you were right on the canal with these beautiful arch windows that opened up onto the canal, and it really was watching those gorgeous gondolas going by. It was so picturesque and so glorious. And so I was sitting here going, oh, my God, what am I doing? Because, of course, for the last 3 or 4 years while our eldest has been away at school, all of our trips, every cent that we spend on travel is going back and forth to Australia or Qatar. And I can have what feels like a relaxed, you know, staycation in both places, but it means there has not been any more of that, those family holidays, you know, to those wonderful picturesque locations. And so I've been quite jealous and craving that, but I am not craving the planning that is involved, or, like you said, being a tour guide sort of to your family and feeling, I don't know, that responsibility of, are we all having a good time?
Yeah, and I don't know why I feel it. I shouldn't have to. I say to the kids, okay, we're going here, Google it, find something you guys want to do. They say, oh, because you always make us do the walking tours and you always make us do this. I said, okay, that's fine, but find something you want to do, and then we'll do it. And then we turn up first day, okay, what are we doing? They all look at me. Yeah. So I don't want to, and really all I could do is say, but I got the accommodation, but I got the accommodation. And everyone had to just accept that, yes, that actually was a good thing. Yes. But look, yeah, we did have a good time, but there were, it's just easier to be at home. I mean, my family like things a particular way, and each member likes different things a different particular way. And being out of their natural environment, they can't necessarily have those things that particular way. And it's stressful for them and can become traumatic for the family as a group.
Yeah. And is this also an insight too, that when you have really little people, you think, oh, I can't wait for them just to be that bit older so we don't have a stroller and we don't have to carry someone in a baby buggy or a baby Bjorn or whatever, a sling, and we don't have to do this and we don't have to eat at this place. We don't have to be in bed and back in the hotel room by 6:30 so they can go to sleep, all those things. But then when you do get to the tween stage, it's like, oh, yeah, but they don't stop whining and they don't want to walk long distances because their feet hurt and they don't want to look at that museum. They can't bear another building. I mean, I have a classic photo of my four children at the Louvre, and they are all sitting up against a wall with the most miserable look on their faces. They're on the floor. They're so bored. Do you know?
Well, when you have older children and Wi-Fi, they have to be back so they can be on the Wi-Fi. We have to have at least a couple of hours a day, Mum. Come on. You know, this is unfair. You know, it's like, dude, look around. And then one of them showed me a video and said, look, this is called 4 Minutes, All the Things You Need to See in Venice in 4 Minutes on YouTube. I said, oh, don't show me that.
Yeah, I think I know that we've had lots of great tips and ideas of taking your kids on holidays. And I think, Nikki, that one of, yes, that everybody has to choose somewhere they want to go and something they want to do or a particular food that they want to eat or whatever, that is a great tip if you're traveling with kids who are tweens and you know, able to search and do those things themselves, is to get them more involved in what you're going to see and what you're going to do. I also think there's certain locations that are great. My kids absolutely loved our holiday to London, and they very much did that. We stayed in great accommodation in Kensington. They'd all picked a particular place they wanted to go. It was a particularly good, we got great weather, we rode bikes, we did the London Eye, we did sort of fun sort of things. I guess there weren't too many churches and too many museums. There was a lot of activities as well. It just depends, doesn't it? And is Venice a place that you go for a romantic holiday with your partner, not somewhere with your kids? I don't know.
Well, no, it's fine with the kids. It was totally fine. Look, it was fine. It's just when you're in the middle of it, you realize it's not all, you know, rainbows and unicorns.
Yes.
We had it one day where we all had an hour to guide. So we didn't have GPS or anything. We're just sort of walking around Venice doing things. And that was really fun. We walked sort of through sort of lots of back alleys. My kids don't particularly love crowds and noise. And at one stage we were in quite a touristy place. My daughter leads us into a church and we all sit down in the pew and we whisper. I said, what are we doing here? And she said, it was so noisy outside. I just want to sit in here for a minute. No, and you know, and then she said, I think this is the first time I've been in a church. I said, it is not the first time. So we had to have a whole run through of all the time she's been in church, and we're whispering. And then I said, okay, when you're ready. So then she sort of took some time and then we went back outside again.
So cute.
You know, it's just one of those things. Wow.
All right. Okay. So Nikki, on another note, reviews. We had a new review on iTunes this week, and this one was from CDJFRJDDFJTFG.
Is that a Welsh name?
Anyway, she said, this podcast is like having a chat with friends. Grab a coffee or head off for a walk. You'll never be lonely no matter where you find yourself. I love that. Aww. I think that should be a tagline for Two Fat Expats. You'll never be lonely no matter where you find yourself.
We'd love to credit
That's
you.
A really good one. Yes, I would love to credit you. Yes, TJFRDJFIF. FH, if you could give us your name so we can credit you, because I think that is such a lovely, 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 lovely phrase. If you want to leave a review, we would love it if you did. Just go to your podcast app or to iTunes and leave a review. The reason that podcasters always beg their listeners to leave a review is it's the only way that people can find you. Otherwise, we're pretty much invisible on iTunes. But if we do get reviews, it kind of bumps us up into the search where we head into those sections where people can find us.
I would say on that too, Kirsty, because we're an international podcast with international listeners in over 160 countries, we want all the iTunes people. Yeah. So this review came through on Australian iTunes, but we get other reviews on UK iTunes and US iTunes. So we really need everyone in all the zones to review us so we can,
yes.
make a little impact.
Yes.
There.
Technically expat.
So this week I have a technically expat, a tech expat present tip.
Ooh.
And I can say this now because this podcast is being recorded now, but by the time it airs, my surprise will be sprung so I can talk about it. It is my husband's birthday tomorrow and he's turning a number with a zero in it. And I have used a great expat tip, which is I used a online service called fromabirdie.com and I got over 50 people. My aim was for 50 people, but I got over 50 people from five continents around the world to submit a birthday message and or photos for him. And then I've made it into a book with a magical cover and it got delivered yesterday.
Oh, so you asked friends from all over the world to then add bits and pieces about him?
I did. So, and from different stages of our life. So the book starts in Australia and our time there and university and school and friends like that. Then I've moved through to professional life. So I've got a whole section of people he's worked with around the world. And then I've gone into each country we've lived in and people from each of those countries. That's how I ordered it. So there you go. I feel very proud because I'm not a huge advanced planner and I had to plan quite a bit out for this. So I'm hoping that he appreciates the effort.
That's very nice. And do you mind me asking, was it an expensive present to do?
Well, it's not actually really expensive. I chose the more expensive option because I knew that I would be pushed for time and I knew that I didn't want to spend a lot of time fiddling around with it. I think it's about $50 if you want just to print a book that you do all the editing on. But I chose the option where they do all the editing and place it. So what happens is you get it's just a website and you get sent like an invitation and you can put a password on it or not. And so you just send a message to your friends and say, here's a link, press the link, use this password and just enter a message. And then they can edit it, change it, go back whenever they want and add photos to the same thing. So sometimes the photos are around the wrong way or in a different order. Or so when I use the editing service, which came with it, I could say they sent me a draft and I'd say, move this photo here, do that. And they did all the grammar corrections and, you know, made sentences make sense and things like that. And I could also do a little bit of editing as well in advance. So I could change people's messages, which I didn't, but sometimes I added a word or change the spelling to make it Australian spelling. So yeah, and then you have to pay the shipping. So depending where it does ship from the US, so depending where you live, the shipping has a different cost associated with it. Someone had put it in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group and as a good tip for a leaving gift, which I thought is also a great tip. But I just thought, you know, it's really great. I sent the message out and I said to people, hey, guess what? I'm saving you sending him a card for his birthday.
Yeah, nice.
And that's how I sold
it. It's all in the marketing. Yeah.
And I had to chase people. So what I would say is if people ask you to contribute to this kind of thing, just do it. Do it straight away.
Yes.
Do it.
Because I can imagine it wasn't frustrating at all having to chase people up to leave their message.
No.
Of love. Nikki, you mentioned the Two Fat Expats Facebook group. We have over 10,000, or no, actually, are there 11,000 members?
11.
We have 11,000 members in there now, and you can jump in and learn everything from where to find the Mahjong group in Myanmar or how to buy fresh milk in Tripoli. It's under Two Fat Expats in the groups on Facebook. Expat money. Now, Nikki, last week we talked about wills and we promised we'd follow up with sort of a more in-depth PDF, which we're currently sort of working away on at the moment. But you did want to add something, and I think this is a really crucial tip that we probably should have mentioned last week that we didn't, and well done to you. Do you want to throw that in now?
Sure, I will. It is something that we had on our notes, but someone had messaged me as well. I have to give credit where credit's due, on our Two Fat Expats Instagram account.
Right.
And they said, hey, when you're doing the will stuff, just remind people that they have to set guardians in the particular country they're in. And I said, yes, we've got that down, but that's a very good point. We should talk about it. Because I remember when we were in Hong Kong and we were planning our first ever trip away from the kids, we went for a long weekend for our 10th wedding anniversary to Phuket. And I remember that we had to write a document on the spot and get some people to witness it and leave it in a drawer. And I didn't really want anyone to ever have to read it. But we had to allocate local temporary guardianship to someone for the children if something happened to us, because even though we have permanent guardians in our will, which was registered in Australia, if we didn't have a local designated guardian, the children would go, the government would take the children until such time as the permanent guardians could prove and go through the process of proving that they were there to take care of them. So, and that would be a very traumatic process on top of everything else that would be traumatic about that. And so I remember that from Hong Kong. And I think the same stands in any country you're in. Not that necessarily what would happen, but it's much, much better for it all to be very clear. In the case of, you know, long-term guardianship are these people, but short-term guardianship in country is these particular people.
Yes. Yeah. It just reminded me of a case where that did happen here, where something did happen to a parent and a child was left. And there was that really confusing moment of we should get this child to safety, to someone else's house before a government official wants to know where they are and what's going on. Do you know, like, you want to have all of that stuff in place, because I couldn't think of anything worse than your child being sort of left in limbo for that period of time. Now, Nikki, moving right along, because we always like to move from something really traumatic and terrible and sad to lighthearted chit-chat. You were going to talk to me about Stephanie's message.
Yeah, so Stephanie left us a message this week on our SpeakPipe channel, which is you go to www.truefatexpats.com and press the button there and leave us a message. Okay, so Stephanie left us a message, and her message was about what we can do to help others in a situation where you might be new, or they might be colleagues or acquaintances rather than good friends, and something happens to them and they have an illness and they're unable to operate as they normally do. And what is the best way to help someone like that? When you feel you want to do something, but you don't know exactly
We're not besties. I'm not going to sit there with my arms around you.
Yes.
But I'm really concerned about you, and I want to help you out, but I don't want to tread on your toes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that's actually it's a really good point, and it's something that I've recently been through here. So there's a lady in a coffee group that I'm in that has three small children, and she has just had a recurrence of an illness, and it's not going very well. And so somebody formed a WhatsApp group, and I said, okay, I'll be in it. I want to be able to help, but I don't want to be sort of fronting up every day, because that's, you know, we're not that kind of friends, but I want to be able to do something.
Yeah.
What I did was I just joined the meal train. And so I signed up for making meals sort of every couple of weeks, just make one meal for the family. When you do make meals for other people, just a good tip, and it's harder in a country like Germany, which is very big on recycling, but when you do make meals, try and take them in disposable dinnerware or disposable containers.
Yes.
Because if you take a meal, a beautiful lasagna or a lovely casserole, and you take it in a beautiful, your most favorite casserole dish, you know, you're going to want that dish back, and you don't want to put the pressure on the person getting it or the pressure on you to go back and intrude in their life again. So
that's right. And they probably don't have the room to store your big, beautiful dish either, because they've got enough big, beautiful dishes of their own. That's absolutely right. Good point.
So that's always a thing that I remember. And when I first started doing a lot of meal train stuff, was in the States, and that's sort of, it's a go-to. And the other thing is that when the people set up the meal trains, it's it's sometimes also nice to have just a drop-off point. So you don't have to knock on their door or ring their bell or have someone answer the door. You can just say between 3 and 5, I'll drop it off in this place or on this doorstep and just send a WhatsApp or some kind of message to say it's there, you know, enjoy, whatever.
Yeah. So good point.
That's one thing you can do. Another thing is I have someone else who I've met here who I really like, but she's definitely an acquaintance, and her daughter is in hospital and she's been hospitalized, and I don't know anything about meals for that family. And so I've sort of been sitting around thinking, God, I really want to do something. And yesterday in my cookbook club, I'm passing around a cookbook for later in the year. And I said, who wants it next? And she said, I want it. And I said, okay, good. I'm going to bring it to you and then I'm going to pick it up from you. And so you don't have to worry about passing it on. That's something I can do. And it's really small, but I just thought,
felt
a little bit useful. And I know it's all about me and not about her, but I thought I could, at least I'm helping in some way. Like I've been feeling really that I'd really like to do something, but I didn't know how to be useful at all. And when you're not in the same country, so I have another friend. I've got a lot of friends. I like to think I've got a lot of friends. So at the moment, I've got another friend in the States.
Yeah.
So I've got another friend in the States who's going through a really rough time. And I sort of just picked up on it on Facebook, a couple of things. There was no really, you know, bad post, but I just read a couple of things. I thought, oh, I'm just going to check in on her. Because that's the thing about social media. You think you know what's going on in people's lives, but we've talked before about how you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes.
That's right. You can think they're having a fantastic time in their holiday in Venice and they're actually ready to pull their own eyeballs out.
Right. So I just messaged her and I said, hey, you know, it's me. Everything all right? I'm just feeling that I might be missing something going on in your life. And she told me what was going on. And so I've actually diarized, which sounds really brutal, but it's the easiest way for me to do it. Just once a week I've diarized just to check in on her. And then when I see things that are funny or I think that she might think are funny or whatever, then so I'm not saying the every week, hey, just checking in. How's it going now? I'll put it aside or I'll send it on the spot. And then when the reminder comes up to say check in, I think I've already done my check in for this week. And if I've got something else to say, I'll also do it then. But I just want to remind myself just to keep checking in and just making sure that everything's going okay with her. So, yeah. And just because there's nothing else I can do except kind of be there for her.
Actually, you just remind me, I had a girlfriend that did that with me when I had breast cancer, and it was a very close girlfriend of mine who just, she would weekly just send me another little note, just checking in. She'd talk kind of at me. Do you know, there was no expectation for a response. She would just tell me what was going on with her. I should just say, hi, Shari, how are you? But she was beautiful because it was just a lovely little message every week. And it does mean something, particularly if you say, look, there is no need for you to write back. There is no expectation. I'm just letting you know I'm thinking of you and this is what's happening with us, and just do it that way. Nikki, location, location, location. I am busting for this one because you spoke to the beautiful Gwen, who you and I have both known online for a long time, who's in LA.
Correct. This week, L is for LA.
All right, so I'm going to listen to it right now.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love?
Oh, this is the hardest question. I would have to say 6.75, maybe 7.
Okay. And what's caused that? Like, is that recently gone up or recently gone down?
Okay. So when we first arrived for the first probably 6 months or so, it would have been 9.5. We were just in love with it. Like, everything was new and fun and a spin out. And then you get into the reality of LA. And I remember someone saying to me, she was a Brit and she's married to a German. And I said, oh, how long did it take you to, you know, to feel comfortable in LA? She said, 5 years. I said, 5 years? Holy hell, I should be out of there by 5 years. But she's right. It does take 5 years. So it's been up and down, and it's on, like, the number goes up. It is going up. A couple of weeks ago when we were in Vegas having an almighty time, it probably would have been a 9.75. But, you know, yeah, that doesn't happen all the time.
I understand it's all very spread out. So what area do you live in and what's your best local find?
So we live in the valley. When we first moved here, we lived up in the hills of Beverly Hills, Beverly Hills adjacent. It's actually this loophole, and it's called Beverly Hills Post Office, and the postcode is 90210. So we thought we were rock stars moving into Beverly Hills 90210, but it's actually not the city of Beverly Hills, so it's really funny. But then we moved just down the other side of the hill to a place called Sherman Oaks, and that's like officially the valley. And we, the valley has this stigma, but everyone who lives there actually does like it, so it's really funny. And I would have to say that the best local find would be Bluestone Lane, the Australian coffee shop that moved in Studio City just next door, because they make great coffee. And they actually have not all Australians working there, but they actually have this cute Australian boys working there.
Are they maybe some actors in town?
Yeah, I'd say so, yes.
With a backup courier as a barista.
Yeah, yeah.
What drives you crazy?
Oh, my God. This is a hard one. So I would have to say it doesn't drive me crazy, but it's a WTF. The ladies who have their faces that look like the Joker, and it's a real thing here. You know, lips up to their cheekbones and fillers, and, you know, they just look silly. And I think they think that they're aging gracefully, but they're not. You know, I go back to Australia and I see, you know, friends of mine in their 50s or whatever, and they just look lovely, you know. You look like at someone like Helen Mirren and she just looks beautiful, but you look at some of these ladies and they're over-polished and not very pleasant to look at. So that's just a little thing. I think the thing that would drive me the most crazy is the it's all about me mentality, especially on the roads. Obviously,
I was waiting for you to mention traffic.
It's, you know, a 24/7 traffic jam. It's not as bad as Asia, but it still drives you insane. And I think it is because everyone is just interested in how they're going to get from A to B quicker than you are, weaving in and out of the traffic in the on the freeways. And yeah, it's not very pleasant.
What's one place you'd love to live?
We've always had this dream to live in London. My daughter and I, my husband commutes backwards and forwards. When I say commutes, he probably does 1 week out of four in London, and we would just love to go and do that whole London thing. And we spend a little bit of time there, but I have to be really mindful and careful just to, you know, that whole careful what you wish for thing, because we are really enjoying it here and we're finally settled. And so, you know, yeah, you just see what life has to offer and go from there.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about living an expat life?
If you get an invitation, take it. So you might not necessarily like that person that's inviting you somewhere, but, and isn't that a nasty thing to say, but you know what I mean. You might not have the same wavelength or
you might not know yet. You might not know if you're going to like them.
Well, and that's the other thing, yeah. You know, don't judge so quickly because they might actually end up being like the one. So, yeah, always say yes to an invitation, go out and meet people.
And what's the biggest lesson that you've learnt?
Oh, I don't think I've learnt one yet. I think I make the same mistakes all the time. And, you know, LA is a really difficult place when talking about making the same mistake again. I think one of my things is I jump in boots and all, because that's kind of what you have to do when you're an expat. But I think that I'm learning, especially here in LA, just probably jump in, but maybe not boots and all. So let's just do a little dance before you start going out properly.
Now that's actually quite good. So just dip a toe in rather than boots.
Yeah, but you know, I don't want to learn from my mistake in that I stop trying to make friends and meet people, because that's not right either. But just definitely suss them out a little bit better first.
What we do is we give recommendations of about podcasts we're listening to, or movies we're watching, or TV shows or books. Do you have anything that you're listening, reading, watching at the moment that you'd recommend?
Oh my God, I just saw A Star Is Born last week.
Oh, I want to
Wow. Yep. Just wow. I had no idea what to expect. I thought it was such an odd combination, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, but just wow.
Oh, that was brilliant. I really liked that. I really liked it because you just answered all these questions that I have had about Gwen's life in LA. I obviously follow Gwen on Facebook and on Instagram and everything. And so when you're looking from afar, there's definitely a theme here this week, Nikki, of looking afar in people's social media. But like you see that Gwen's in LA, that her partner obviously works in some form in the film.
In the entertainment industry, yes.
Entertainment industry. So you've seen her go to different awards and I remember when Gwen first went, I remember her saying something about they'd gone to a kids' swimming carnival and I don't know if I'm getting this completely wrong, but like there was like an LA power couple there, whether it was Gwyneth and Chris Martin or it was someone like that, do you know, like that they were there with their kids. And so it just looked like this incredible step into a completely different world, right? And I've wondered the whole time I've watched, because I've seen her kids have been at these schools and, you know, now going off to university and whatever, I have wondered how she's coped with sort of the plasticity. So when she was saying about those faces of those women that you see and, you know, because I wondered whether it was all starting to get a little bit normal for Gwen, and it obviously has not got normal at all, that she still looks at it and goes, wow, this is different.
Yeah. No, and as always, I had a very lengthy discussion with her and it was so weird to speak to someone who you think, you know. She said, I feel like I know you. I said, I know, I feel like I know you too. And so we talked about it. But, yeah, so the entertainment industry is a new industry for her husband. He was in a totally different industry before. And Gwen recently went to the Emmys. So there's just so many cool things.
Yeah, so many cool things. Yeah. No, that was really interesting. And I love that we've done something as, I guess, you know, as vanilla, although it's not vanilla, as LA, but do you know what I mean? It's not when I think sometimes when we think expat, we think that you have to have gone to the jungles of the Amazon, you know, to have, you know, really done it. But I love it when we go to when we do the other extreme of going to such a Western city.
Yes. And that's what I thought. We're up to L and we haven't done any cities in North America. Well, no, we did E for Edmonton, but any cities in the US. So I thought time to have an American city.
Perfect. Well done. Okay, Nikki, let's do a very quick run through because this is long of telly. Have you watched Kelly Lane Exposed?
I have not. I've looked at your list of things you've watched and I've only watched one of them.
Oh,
but
wow.
It is on my list of things to watch and I will make sure that I do. Look, so can you tell me all about it?
Well, look, shall we wait till you've watched it and then if anyone else wants to? Do you think you'll watch it this week and we can talk about it next week?
I think I can manage that, yes.
Okay, all right. So that's on ABC iView. And it's called Exposed. And Kelly Lane, if anyone else also wants to watch her and then chat with us next week about it, Kelly Lane was infamous around the early 2000s for being on trial for killing a baby of hers. And then this whole story comes out that she's actually had 5 pregnancies and 3 babies. And 2 of those babies were adopted, but one baby never came home. Well, one baby supposedly went out the door with her at hospital, but was never seen. And it is just, once again, it's one of those stories set on the Insular Peninsula in Sydney.
But I'm really intrigued because I remember the stories, but I'm really intrigued by what I've seen people commenting on social media about it. It seems to be a very different sort of viewpoint. So I am very intrigued to watch it. So
let's chat about it. All right. And one last thing, because I'll let you get on with yours, but I also wanted to ask you if you'd watched The Split.
I have watched The Split and I loved it.
Oh, tell me why you loved it.
I loved it because it had strong female roles. Most of the leads were female. I love that. I love the family relationship dynamic. I thought it was great. I just thought it was an adult show. You know, it wasn't a show you'd watch with your kids, really. It's just a show. It's just one of those things. And it's not, you know, I didn't learn great things in the world, but I just thought the level of that the show was pitched at is that it did make you think about things too. So it made you question some of the things that they were presenting in the show. And the fact they're divorce lawyers too is also quite interesting, but irrelevant to how to work. But just the way it all fitted together. And I love the actor that plays her husband, whose name escapes me momentarily.
Stephen Mangan, is it?
Yes.
Okay. So for those who haven't seen it, it's a story of two divorce. Well, it's the story, I guess, of marriage, love, relationships and divorce, but it's three sisters and their mother who've had an estranged father who arrives back on the scene, and then all the complications of marriage and divorce while you're also watching them play out people's divorces in court. But there was one moment, Nikki, where the married couple who you kind of fall in love with at the beginning because their marriage kind of looks so cute and recognizable, right, with their in and out of each other's life. And then you kind of see that there's all sorts of other things going on. But there's a moment where they're in serious trouble in their marriage because I don't want to spoil anything, but they're going through a big upheaval and they're standing at the sink he's brushing his teeth, she's taking her makeup off. Do you know something that all of us can identify with? And he says, love is this. And, you know, they're in the most mundane of mundane, and, you know, it's the whole feeding kids and homework done and life organized and all that stuff. And he's really trying to push to her that this is what love is. It's that ordinary everydayness together. It's not the romantic thrill. And I think there's that to me is the thread that runs through the whole time. It's I just thought it was really, really good. And what I really liked about it was at the end of the first season, you can see exactly where there could be a fabulous second season because you're left not knowing what's going to happen next or how the rest of it is going to play out.
Yeah, and it's six episodes, so easy just to knock over. Oh, you don't have to watch it for 23 episodes. But I love Stephen Mangan. Do you watch the show episodes as well?
Yes, and he's fantastic in that.
He's such a good actor. Yeah, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, he is. But, Nikki, I was going to ask you, with things like The Split and then me going back and watching the Doug Anthony All-Stars and being able to do that, I wanted to ask you what you thought that can our generation now just not let go of anything? And is technology sort of facilitating that? You know, when you can go back and find your old girlfriend, or you can go back and look at your favorite band or your favorite comedy act and whatever, because nothing now can be forgotten because it's just there all the time to be chased up. So do you think we just don't let go of anything anymore?
That's a really good talking point, and I can't think of a very intelligent answer to that right now. I guess it could be yes, but it also could be there's so much information coming in, and maybe by doing that, you know, we would be sitting around, like our parents sat around saying, lamenting the fact that there was TVs and why weren't we talking to each other because the TV was there.
Yes.
But yet we all sat together to watch TV shows, which I mean, in our family, we don't do very often. We have to schedule a family session of TV watching.
Yeah.
Because everyone would rather have their own screens. And you know, their parents, our parents' parents lamented that we didn't all sit around the radio and listen to the weekly guests, that it, to think fondly of a previous time is not unusual, to be able to have it at your fingertips. I mean, my children really don't enjoy that, because my husband is very big 80s music fan and he's always playing video clips and music from the 80s and, you know, telling Alexa to play a particular song, and it drives them insane. So I guess it really just depends. And, you know, when they grow up, they'll want to, you know, think about a previous time where their life was simpler, which I can't really imagine. But anyway, I'm sure whatever happens next. So I don't know. I think I'd have to think on that a little bit more. But tough one. Yeah. Just throwing that out.
It is
me like that.
Yeah. And I want to, well, maybe we can do that as a talking point for expat life, because there was a moment in the Doug Anthony All-Stars doco where he was saying, he was talking about their old shows at the Edinburgh Festival, and he said, oh, but of course there's no record of that now, because, you know, they were in these little plays and they were climbing up walls and doing whatever. And the expression he used was, because people didn't have cameras disguised as phones in their pockets, you know, there's no record of it. And I was thinking, you know, there is a record of absolutely everything now that you can go back and visit. Nothing gets forgotten. Nothing gets left behind. And I think it makes expat life even harder. But you're right. It's a talking point for another day. I want to hear about a million little things.
And it's possible, guys, you want to hear about a million little things too. And other things we talked about, like podcasts and all great stuff we'll have to keep for next week. Because, guys, really, I know Kirsty and I disagree about the length, but this is getting out of hand today. So we'd love you to come back next week and listen to the rest of our conversation, where we talk about all the things we watched and read and listened to over the week. So see you then.
And I will see you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.